This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Little Atoms, a radio show about ideas and culture. With me, Neil Denny. This week, Julianne Pacheco on her debut novel, The Anthill. Julianne Pacheco grew up in Cali, Colombia. She is a graduate of both the MA and the PhD in creative writing at the University of East Anglia, where she currently teaches on a creative writing MA. She is the only writer to have two stories included in the 2015 anthology of the best British short stories, and her short fiction has been published by The New Yorker, among other publications. In 2017, Faber published her story collection, The Lucky Ones, and she was shortlisted for the Sunday Times Peters, Fraser and Dunlop Young Writer of the Year Award. Julianne's debut novel, The Anthill, is what we're going to be talking about today. Julianne, welcome to Little Atoms.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell me, first of all, how you would describe this novel.
I suppose I would describe this novel as a coming-of-age story, but I think I've always liked novels that sort of fit a lot of different stories or like a lot of different genres in them. So I know in the US they were kind of marketing it as like a horror novel, and I think there's definitely elements of horror in there. But yeah, if I had to describe it in sort of like a simple soundbite, I would call it a coming of age story.
So Lena, or Carolina, who is, I guess we could say, the main protagonist, the book is potentially told from different perspectives, but we'll talk about that perhaps a little more in a while. But she's our main protagonist. In the book, she's born in Colombia and comes to the UK after a tragedy at age 8 to go to school, which sort of, without the tragedy, mirrors your own life a little bit. So what's the difference between your own experience in that?
Oh, I mean, there's a lot of differences. I mean, for starters, like, I stayed in Colombia until I was 18, whereas, you know, the main character in The Anthill, like, she left when she was a child. So I guess one of the main sort of threads in the book is her feeling of disconnection from her childhood home, which wasn't really like the experience for me. Like, I would say that I feel like I sort of had a more consistent connection to Colombia than her, simply because, you know, my sister still lives there and my parents stayed there until 2012. But yeah, but that was something that I think just made her like interesting to me as a character, like someone who felt disconnected from her homeland, I suppose, because that's also like a big part of the story, like this idea of like coming home and kind of reconnecting with your past. And that's why, you know, a big part of the book deals with her, you know, reconnecting with her childhood best friend.
Yeah, or at least attempting to sort of reconcile with the past. Mm-hmm. And indeed, as you said, her struggles with her identity through the book as well, in that, you know, she's called gringa by people in Colombia, and she's constantly, it almost becomes like a sort of comic refrain through the book that she's constantly saying, actually, no, I'm from here as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's something that, I mean, that's what I think is sort of like what's interesting about writing fiction, where sometimes people will like, I mean, this especially kind of happens with my parents, like they don't seem to understand that like fiction is like you invent things, right? So sometimes like I'll write something and I'll think like, oh, like when my parents will read this, they'll be like, when did you do this? Like, what were you thinking? You know? But yeah, I mean, there's obviously definitely, you know, I think like most writers, you sort of take personal feelings or personal elements from your life and you sort of retranslate them or reconfigure them on the page. So I think that feeling of kind of like awkwardness of trying to constantly sort of explain your background, like, you know, it wasn't the same for me, but like that was something definitely based on, you know, on my experience of kind of living abroad, because, you know, sometimes people will ask me like where I'm from, and then I'll just say like, oh, I was born in England, or like my parents live in the US right now, simply because I don't want to get into this sort of really long explanation of that I lived in Colombia for so many years. But then that sometimes makes me feel bad, like I'm lying or like I'm not telling the whole truth. So, I mean, so yeah, so that feeling kind of awkwardness or discomfort is like definitely a personal one for me, I would say.
Tell us something more about Lena. Who is she?
So she's a young woman who, in the opening pages of the book, has come back to Medellin, the city where she was born, the city where she was from. Yeah, I mean, she is the main character of the book, but then her best friend, or like her childhood best friend, Matias, is also someone who plays like a really important part, and like we do hear his voice kind of closer to the end of the book. And I suppose sort of like the main story, their main conflict of the book, is them kind of like butting heads, where she really wants to know what he's been up to, like how he's spent like the past 20 years. And he's a very kind of private person, a very reserved person who just wants to move on. Like he just wants like a fresh start. Like he doesn't want to unpick the past, kind of, you know, pick at the scabs. And I suppose he kind of parallels the situation of Colombia at the time, like post like peace agreements, where it's kind of, you know, obviously it's not like a direct parallel, but this idea of sort of like, well, how do you sort of move on from the past? Like it's kind of talking about it constantly. Like, is that actually like a healthy thing to do? But at the same time, obviously like burying things and not having things come out into the open either, like that has consequences as well.
And she comes from a relatively wealthy background, and she'd obviously grown up abroad. So there's various reasons why she might look like a privileged outsider to the locals. But also, as the book goes on, and both about this, but also obviously about, you know, the gradual revelations about Matty. We're not going to give too much away about the story, but let's just, I guess, summarize a little bit in that we start to realize that she's a lot more troubled than she at first seems.
Yeah, and like in terms of her background, like that was definitely something I thought about a lot, because sort of my first book, which was a collection of short stories, The Lucky Ones, like that also kind of dealt with, you know, a group of like, I guess, of what you would call like the Colombian upper class, of kind of like, you know, people with drivers who go to private schools where, you know, like you speak English or like French and so forth. So yeah, and I mean, like that was, I mean, maybe I shouldn't say this, but that was something that the people who kind of like criticized my work for, where they were like, oh, like it just kind of focuses on like rich people. And then I was just kind of like, well, I think I'll just like do that again, because like it's still something I'm interested in like writing about, sort of like people who kind of like occupy this different part of society, I suppose, is kind of like elite. This elite part. So yeah, so maybe that was like a bit like cheeky of me. I've sort of like moved on from that, and like that kind of attitude of just like, well, like people are kind of telling me not to do this, so like I'm just gonna go ahead and do this anyway, and like write this character that I think a lot of people will be like annoyed by, just because like I want to be like a bit provocative. So yeah, I probably like showed my hand like too much there, but anyway, that was like definitely something.
That also seems a bit of an unfair criticism of The Lucky Ones, which uses the sort of the focus of the school to look at lots of different characters from, you know, from different strata of life.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like, I think, like, I've met some people who, you know, like me, like, who aren't Colombian, but it's like they have like a connection with the country, and you know, they'll kind of like want to write about Colombia, but they'll want to make it these kind of like issue novels, which is like fine, right? So they'll kind of like ventriloquize like through the voice of like someone kind of like very different from them, you know, like a character, you know, who's kind of like growing up in the barrio, right? And that was something like I didn't want to do. Like I didn't feel comfortable doing that. I was like, I'm not going to like, you know, kind of like ventriloquize through the voice of like someone. That was just something like I didn't feel comfortable doing, and something that I didn't want to do. And I think it's like really interesting that some of the books that I really like one book that I thought was really interesting was Lost Children Archive by Valeria Luiselli, about the kind of like child migrant crisis in like Central America. And so that book, people were also like, oh, like why is this book talking about migration from the perspective like of this couple who are getting divorced, like going on this like road trip? But I actually thought that was like a much more honest and like interesting way to like discuss the issue, Right. Anyway, so that's like a bit of a tangent. But yeah, I mean, that was something else that I was thinking about. 'Cause like early on, like with the Anhole, like I did sort of have chapters that were like from the perspective of like different people, like from the community, like mothers or like children, kind of like people in the local area. But then first of all, I was like, oh, this is kind of coming off as like a bit too similar to the Lucky Ones. Like I've already kind of done that of sort of like many different voices. Like I think I just want to focus on two characters.
You mentioned that later in the book, it becomes sort of apparent that Matty is narrating parts of it, but we also see the narration of, well, the perspectives of Lena from, you know, both first and third person. And I wanted to talk about that change of perspectives that happens from the first to the second part of the book.
I mean, I think like initially that wasn't something that I did very consciously. I think like a lot of writers, well, not like heavy writers, but I think some people like when they draft, they kind of just like see what comes out. Like you just kind of like trust your initial instinct. And then it's when you go back and edit, like that's when you sort of start asking yourself questions of just like, well, why did I choose to do it this way? Like what kind of purpose does this have in the book? And by having the novel written in the style where like a first, you know, the opening chapter is in the second person, and then in the subsequent chapters, like Lena isn't referred to by name, like she's referred to as the new volunteer, and in the third section she does start going by Lena. In terms of like my instinct, it just felt like this is a decision that makes sense because, you know, like this is sort of how the character it's feeling or how she thinks of herself, right? Like it's like with the second person, like that creates kind of like a convenience distance. Like you're sort of watching yourself from afar, you're disoriented. And so that's sort of is a suitable way of like how you might feel when you've suddenly like arrived in this in your home country where you haven't been for 20 years. And then, you know, she's a person who she isn't really sure who she is. Like she sort of feels very uncertain. And she has this identity of like, yes, I'm the new volunteer. And yeah, so I think kind of writing that way of like referring to her in those different ways. It was just a decision that just made sense to me. I sort of just trusted my gut and like trusted my instinct in using it.
And tell us something about Matty as well, then.
Yeah, and so he is, you know, sort of a simple way of describing him would be like Lena's like childhood friend, but I mean calling him like her brother would also be accurate because they lived together, they grew up together, they were very close. And you know the kind of like revelation of like the backstory of sort of like how that dynamic came about like how he came to live with her family is you know kind of a key moment in the book. So
Yeah, we're not going to give
that,
that
yeah, you'll have to read it to find
away.
out, but yeah, a tantalizing revelation. But yeah, and I mean I think it's really interesting because sometimes I feel like when people read the book, like people think Lena is the character who's sort of the stand-in for me. And I can understand that because, you know, like me, like she studied literature, though technically, you know, I studied like creative writing. But yeah, so we both sort of have like an academic background. You know, we're both like the same gender. But like really, like Maddie is the character who I feel like he resembles me more because I think sort of like his struggles is just kind of like his kind of like desire for like privacy and sort of like also the way he really wants to help people, right? And like that's an instinct I recognize in myself too, just sort of like, oh yeah, like this is sort of the way that I can make myself kind of useful to people by playing that sort of like helper role. And so, you know, that's why he's founded the Ant Hill, which is like the community center where a lot of the book takes place, where it has like after school programs for kids and kind of community meals. And so that was I sort of worked in that like field of work for like a long time. Like I worked in like, you know, nonprofits and like education, like community work. And for a long time, I thought that that was going to be the field that, you know, I wanted to work in. You know, like I was raised Catholic. And so like I had this like idea of just like service or whatever. But then I was like, I'm going to be selfish and I'm going to be like a writer and work primarily like for myself. So that's what I'm doing now. But yeah, that's sort of like who he kind of like represents to me as a character, I suppose.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You listen to Little Atoms. I'm Neil Denny. Today I'm talking to Julianne Pacheco, and we're talking about her new novel, her debut novel, The Ant Hill. And Julianne, you just raised what the titular Ant Hill is. It's a community centre that's been set up by Matty. And as you said, you used to volunteer in a similar establishment for a while. And I just wanted to talk a bit more about that. Just tell us some more about what that was like.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't so much volunteer in a place similar to the Ant Hill. Like, what I did do for a long time was I helped run, they were called like experiential learning programs. So the idea was, it was usually like high school students or kind of like church congregation. Like, the idea was that, you know, you spend like a week working or volunteering somewhere and you kind of learn about like a particular issue. So, you know, kind of like in Portland, Oregon, which is where I lived for a while, like it would be like homelessness. And then I did like a lot of work like in the U.S. border region, never in Colombia though, so that sort of is fictional. But yeah, so obviously that was something I always had in the back of my mind of wanting to write about, because like, first of all, I thought that would be like a good setting for a book, because it's like, you know, like a community, like after school program, that's just like a place where like a lot of people go. So, you know, you would have like the parents, like the kids, the volunteers, like the staff. So I thought that could be a good setting for a novel. And then I was just also like interested in this idea. I don't even know if it's that present in the book anymore. It might have been just like an idea I was like interested in initially, but I don't know if it was sort of an idea that ended up remaining in the book. But I was like interested in this idea of service and like what service means, you know, like whether it actually does mean you can like help someone, or is it just like selfish or just kind of like helping yourself. And then, you know, the sort of like uncomfortable feelings that I had sometimes in the job of just kind of like white saviorism, or like these weird creepy kind of colonial tones, you know, that was something that I thought about obviously for like a long time. Yeah, but I mean, it's like, I don't know like how present any of those like are in the book. I suppose it's like a backdrop and like readers can just kind of take from it, like what they want, I suppose.
Well, that's, I mean, this definitely there, the sort of white saviorism in that, you know, filtered through the other volunteer characters at the Anthill, yeah. the Welsh girl in particular I'm thinking of here. And, you know, this idea of like volunteering somewhere in the developing world as a sort of form of personal growth, almost, you know, a good sort of like Instagram opportunities, but, yeah. you know, somehow doing something that you feel is good, but that the locals might not necessarily actually see in the same way.
Yeah, the whole like volunteerism thing. And, you know, I mean, in the book, like there's like a part where like a church group comes, and then like when they're departing, you sort of see like that the children are sad to see them go. I don't know. I mean, for a lot of those programs, like quite frankly speaking, it's like it's useful to have volunteers, because especially if like the volunteers like pay like a fee, then that goes towards helping sustain like a lot of really important useful programs and services for the community, you know? So it's like, I hope I'm not coming off on like I'm on a soapbox or whatever. It's just like, I'm trying to like give this like really critical message like against those kind of programs, because I've seen like those kinds of programs like do like really helpful things. But yeah, but then obviously there's like this flip side to it. And I mean, like, especially in Colombia, like sort of like the personal feeling for me of, you know, going back there now is sort of like when I was growing up there, you know, like you wouldn't really see tourists. And so then like going back there now, like especially visiting my sister whose husband is from Medellin. So she's lived in Medellin for the past like 11 years, you know, just like the way it's changed in like the past 10 years is shocking to me, you know? And so that was like something that I wanted to like explore, like with my own sort of feelings of like, wow, like, so like now Colombia is becoming this kind of like trendy place for people to go, whereas like when I was growing up, that was not the attitude towards it, right? So that was obviously sort of like a personal feeling that I was like trying to figure out and trying to explore. And I still don't think I have any sort of like definitive answers about it. I think like fiction is sort of more of a place where like you're not giving a lecture, or like you're not providing like an assertive answer, at least like in my opinion. To me, it's kind of more about just like exploring questions and like posing questions.
And to what extent, I mean, obviously, clearly, you know, the current situation is better than there being a civil war. But to what extent has sort of tourism brought gentrification to the extent that it's affecting the local population in the way that it, you know, it has in other sort of other big cities that have seen people pushed out of their own areas by gentrification?
Yeah, I mean, again, like I'm not, you know, I'm not an expert. Like I don't live in Colombia anymore, so I couldn't, you know, answer that with sort of like strong authority, you know. But I mean, like things like Ubers being there instead of like local taxis, like I think that's kind of strange.
You mentioned that, I mean, it's pushed more in the US as a novel with horror elements, and you use sort of elements of the supernatural here. Lena is, you know, she's a postgraduate in Gothic literature, and you use sort of elements of the supernatural, I guess, as a way of sort of exploring how we deal with trauma, both on a personal level and on a national level as the country. So tell me something about sort of incorporating those elements into the story.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that those sort of horror overtones of that horror influence, like mainly came from the fact that a lot of the books that I just really love or that I was reading at the time were, you know, books by, like there was one author in particular, like Mariana Enriquez, who wrote this book, Things We Lost in the Fire, which is short stories. She just had another book, I think it was recently like shortlisted for the International Booker Prize. But a lot of her work is very like sort of explicitly engaging with like horror, or like she's like really influenced by like Lovecraft as well. And so I thought the way that she did that, sort of like use like H.P. Lovecraft style to like write about like Argentina's past, like I thought that was really interesting. Another Argentinian author, like Samantha Schweblin, this Bolivian author, Liliana Calanzi. And then also just like for fun, like for my own pleasure, you know, I was reading people like M.R. James, like Robert Aichman. Like what I really like about horror is just, you know, and I think a lot of people would say this, is just there's something just very cathartic about that feeling it can give you. Like I really love it when like books make me feel something, like if I feel like an emotion, if I'm like turning the pages and I feel kind of sick. But it's interesting because I'm really not someone who, I don't like enjoy violence. Like I can't really like watch violent movies, but I suppose like I am interested in like suspense and tension, or, you know, kind of like disturbing scenes, disturbing imagery. Because again, it's about having that hook and like having that engagement, like in yourself as a writer and like in yourself, you know, in readers as well. So I think that's where the presence of horror emerged in the book, like simply because like that, like at the time, like that was the kind of work like I was reading at the time.
And having already published a collection of short stories, what was it like to then transition to a novel?
It was hard. It was different. Yeah. I mean, I've actually, you know, I've been trying to write like another book for like the past year. And so part of me was just kind of like, how did I do that? You know, it's like there was like this interview with Keith Ridgway, the Irish writer in The New Yorker, where he like described like looking at a book you've written where you're like looking back on like a car wreck you were in, like a traffic accident. And you're just kind of like, what happened? Like, you know, things were flying all over the place. Like I went through the windshield. And I think that's a really good way to think about like writing a novel, where I just look at it and I'm just kind of like, how did I do that? Like, I'm actually like really impressed with myself. So yeah, it was different. Like, yeah, I think writing a novel, I think it's a lot more about like endurance, depending on the kind of like novel you're writing. Like you do sort of have to think more about the structure of the story, like the arc. Like, I don't want to sound like a screenwriter, but yeah, but like with The Lucky Ones, like you're sort of working on, you know, with the short story collection or like a linked collection, you can sort of work on like one chapter at a time because it's sort of like its own self-contained universe. Whereas with the novel, it's like much more, it felt like much more grueling to me. I enjoyed it, but you know, I'm really impressed with people who just consistently write novels all the time. I think it was different. Yeah, I'll sum it up. Like writing a novel is definitely different from writing a short story collection.
To finish it off then, can I get you to read us a bit?
Of course. So I think I will read from the section where it's Lena's first day volunteering at the Ant Hill. So it's her first day as a volunteer. So it's just sort of it's also the first time that the readers get to be at the Ant Hill as well. It's the faded pink building down the road from the grocery store, an hour by bus from the Metro cable stop. Telephone wires cross the sky, chickens cluck from a nearby balcony, a dog with enormous testicles flees uphill. 1 p.m., here they come. Chattering busily, streaming through the propped open door. Ponytails bouncing, shirts untucked, and speckled with dust from tocineta and de totito chips. Some are in school uniforms, white socks pulled up to their knees. Most are in shorts and flimsy flip-flops, thin vest straps verging on uneasily inappropriate. Sweaters are tied tight over belly buttons or draped over shoulders. They're never that many, and the majority are regulars. The new volunteer's first day. Hello, what's your name? Donaldo. Hello, Donaldo. Nice to meet you. And yours? Hello, Julian. Nice to meet you, Dulce. Margarita, what a beautiful name. No running, please. What's your name? Sorry, Becca? Bettina? Sorry, Bettina. Sorry, sorry. Thank you for standing in line, Dulce. 5 minutes in, and she's sweating. The Ant Hill has been running after-school programs in this neighborhood for over 3 years now. Is that right? Is Matias ever going to give her an introductory tour of the premises? 1 p.m. to 3:30. 5 days a week. The children arrive by foot, mainly from local neighborhood schools, sometimes further. They hitch rides with uncles and brothers on the backs of motorbikes. They weave through traffic jams of stalled cars and honking trucks. They hop over puddles and stroll past piles of cement blocks and ladders propped against unfinished buildings, homes that look more like construction sites. The anthill children, arriving. They come with crusty nostrils and reddish-purple bruises under their eyeballs, U-shaped scratches on their foreheads and cheekbones. They come with lips split open from Lord knows what, grandmother smacking them, wrestling matches in the schoolyard. After barely 10 minutes, the new volunteer is already taken aback by the consistent presence of injuries, the cut-open knuckles, the beetle-shaped scabs, eyes so swollen they can only peer out at the world through thin, dark slits.
So I've been talking to Julianne Pacheco. We've been talking about her debut novel, The Ant Hill, which is out in the UK from Faber and Faber. Julianne, thank you so much for taking the time to share it with me.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
This episode of Little Atoms was produced and presented by me, Neil Denny, edited by Sky Redman, and was first broadcast on Resonance 104.4 FM. Little Atoms is supported by 89UP and hosted by Acast. If you enjoyed the show, please do subscribe, rate us on iTunes, and even tell a friend. Thanks for listening.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.